Callum.
OHA.
OHA on.
For the Callum. I've expanded it. It's the entire population.
Good afternoon. Welcome to this House Committee on Early Childhood and Family Supports meeting for Tuesday, February 7th. So we're scheduled today for several informational hearings. I wanted to remind members when we last met, I didn't say anything ahead of time about upcoming topics. So we have a series of upcoming topics that now have been posted on agendas and that. So you have that information available to you. It doesn't mean that you can't ask questions of speakers here that might lead to some of those others. So we can at least identify what those are for people when they come up. But we'll try to, and then if there's others, as you look at those, others that you think we should hear from or gather at least additional information, I'd appreciate knowing that, too. Okay. Oh, yes, Ibsen Huffman.
The back part of the name, Family Sports, I have a bill, if anybody wants to sign on, that is to continue the conversation for the site account that we usually traditionally give to the food bank. If anybody wants to sign on to that bill, Philip Kennedy Wong has it. Mm-hmm. And it's been cut out of the budget, so we're trying to keep the conversation alive. So.
I just signed.
Okay.
Seb did a sign.
Signed right now.
Good job.
May yes, I say something, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This is probably helpful for you all, but also anyone listening today. I have a bill that I'm also encouraging people to sign. That was a bill that I worked on in September. I asked Legislative Council before our September deadline, not knowing whether Measure 97 would pass or not. I thought if there is money on the table, we should be thinking about how we might want to spend it. And the bill is basically to say that kindergartens should have a 15-to-1 ratio because that, I haven't seen her in years, but we worked on child care years ago. I can't believe it. I just looked at you. So child care ratio is for five-year-olds 15 to 1, and yet we throw them into a kindergarten setting with lots of social and emotional development needs as well as pre-literacy, math. So the bill will look completely undoable in its original form, but I'm working with Representative Hack and others to say, well, you know, maybe we should do some kind of pilot for Title I schools who have facilities available. You know, we want to keep the idea on the table, and we want it at least to be a discussion piece for this committee because our standards in child care are so different from what we have in school. So if anyone would like to sign on to that, just know that it will change dramatically from its current form because there's not money on the table to do that. So I'd welcome any sponsors who at least think that the idea is really worth forwarding in some form.
Okay. Anything else from the committee members?
I have a lot of bills people can sign up on.
Okay. Did they relate to our committee?
No.
Okay. I just was checking to make sure. So
support families that way, right?
Well, I can figure it out. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to open the first informational hearing. So first we're talking, hearing about home visiting programs. So on the first panel, we have David. I think you would recognize David, maybe, previously. Martha Brooks and Kate Wilcox. So if you'd come to the podium and introduce yourselves for the record, I'd appreciate it.
Hello. For the record, David Mandel, Acting Early Learning System Director.
Martha Brooks, State Director for Fight Crime, Invest in Kids and Ready Nation, and a member of the Early Learning Council.
Okay. Kate Wilcox, the Maternal and Child Health Manager in the Oregon Health Authority.
Very good.
And before we kick it off, I just wanted to give a little bit of an introduction to the panel. We originally received an invitation from the committee to talk about Healthy Families Oregon, and I'll talk about that a little bit in a moment. But contacted Chair Lively through Zena to sort of say, can we expand that to really talk about the home visiting system? And we put this panel together to really provide you a little bit of a sense of how we're trying to make these different parts work together in a really productive way for families. And with that, I will hand it off to Martha to talk about some of the work that's been happening through the Best Beginnings Committee of the Early Learning Council.
Thank you.
Thank you, David. Good afternoon, and thank you, Chair Lively and members of the committee, for the opportunity to address you today on the issue of voluntary home visiting. It's a piece that's really very near and dear to my heart for a lot of reasons. I am the state director of Fight Crime, Invest in Kids, and Ready Nation. The major organization that backs or looks at home visiting are law enforcement under Fight Crime, Invest in Kids. And that may sound kind of counterintuitive, but as, and I will use a different term, Chief Peluso knows, that is one of the key elements is getting to kids very early on and up front before crime happens. And that starts at prenatal, primarily through age 5. From the perspective of Fight Crime, Invest in Kids, they absolutely believe that you put dangerous criminals away behind bars, but locking them up is not the entire solution. In fact, it is the end solution. A key component to crime reduction is early prevention in the form of home visiting, such as Healthy Families America, which here it's Healthy Families Oregon, Nurse Family Partnership, and Early Head Start, all volunteer parent coaching programs. And all programs we have in Oregon, and all are serving specific at-risk populations. However, these programs not only reduce crime, but they improve school readiness, increase chances that at-risk children will graduate from high school on time, answer many of the issues faced by poverty, and definitely increase the health and well-being of both mother and child. And the return on investment can be almost $6 for every public dollar spent. These savings are in the form of crime reduction, health, mental health costs, decreased welfare dependency, increased employment. So you're getting the picture of what these programs do. One other important thing is that Nurse Family Partnership, which is under Oregon Health Authority, has a 60% lower mortality rate than comparison groups. So again, another benefit. And a lot of these programs can reduce child abuse and neglect by as much as 50%. So what is volunteer parent coaching? Volunteer home visiting programs provide critical support for vulnerable children and families by matching new and expectant parents with trained professionals and provide information and mentoring. Guidance and support by trusted professionals for parents during pregnancy and the first 5 years of the child's life. Most of our home visiting programs here in Oregon are prenatal to age 3. And it can dynamically change what happens in a family, from being an abusive family to a family that is supported and stable and working towards an end goal that provides stability for children. As we know, parenting is the biggest challenge many people will face. For a single and teen parent, this challenge is amplified. Parent coaching gives at-risk parents, or oftentimes single parents, counseling, coaching, support on a range of critical parenting skills. During the home visit, the nurse or trained professional helps the parents learn about early physical and emotional development. They provide families with tools. They also get them into contact with resources that they may need. And a lot of these families are basically ill-equipped to do that on their own. Helps them navigate the systems, connects them with resources such as EI, ECSE, ERDC, medical resources, mental health services, and more. In Oregon, we have been leaders for years, and we continue to be leaders. Through collaboration with the Early Learning Division and the Oregon Health Authority, home visiting programs over the last few years have functioned in unison, providing better coverage and service to the high-need prenatal to age 3 families. Healthy Families America, which is under the Early Learning Division, is a program approved overwhelmingly by the legislature in 1992 to serve families, and it's in all 36 counties running through the hubs. Another nationally recognized evidence-based program, which you'll hear a little more about from Kate, is the Nurse Family Partnership. It is a program administered through the Oregon Health Authority that covers low-income first-time mothers. These visits must be done before pregnancy or during pregnancy and can continue through 2 to 3 years of birth. And this is part of the program that Representative Peluso helped with Senator Wyden. And we have first-time McVee funding, and that's what she went back to D.C. with me on. And that McVee funding continues today. And we're very proud to have a brand-new McVee grant that will allow for professional development. And this is a four-state grant, and I know we may touch on that, but it's really a critical piece because it talks about continuing education, professional development for our home visitors. While I have focused on HFO, Nurse Family Partnership, I also want to talk about Early Head Start, which is also part of that early home visiting piece. And these are for low-income families. This can be center-based or home-based, where Nurse Family Partnership and Healthy Families is all home-based. And I'm a bit concerned about one of our programs. We have Babies First, which has been put into the recommended budget by the co-chairs as zeroing out, which bothers me because this is that first line of defense where a lot of the parents, that may be their only touch with a home visiting coach. We also have Cocoon and Maternal Case Management through the Oregon Health Authority. Under the Best Beginnings Committee, we've worked over the last 18 months to coordinate the working on combined set of metrics, a universal entry tool for home visiting, and we have found that much of this work is happening organically within the counties. We also encourage this to happen in more areas than just the one that I want to mention, which is Yamhill, and they're a stellar example of working together with all the programs. Best Beginnings is also looking at continuing educational needs, and we know that educational opportunities are being considered on pre-K and other early childhood programs, and welcome the opportunity for home visitors to be included in that thought process. I think I might be done. Let me check. No, I have a couple other things. While programs are technically not allowed to keep waiting lists, there is a queue. We know that statewide we are only serving approximately 20% of families. Many who want the service cannot obtain them. In Oregon, 40% of our families have two or more ACEs indicators, and yet we can only provide essential services for far fewer. So with that, I'm going to close, but I'm going to say that, again, this is a program that I advocate for as a lobbyist, but it is something that is very near and dear to my heart personally. I believe in it, and I believe that the state needs to invest in these programs in order to reduce our child abuse and neglect rates, as well as to make sure that our kids are prepared for school.
So if I might ask a question. So part of the learning process here is to understand how all these relate and who's doing what. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't clear. So who's providing the service, or who is, you know, is doing it? Is it multiple groups or different in different communities?
Right. Chair Lively, that's an excellent question. Under the Early Learning Division, they're responsible for Healthy Families Oregon and Early Head Start. It comes, most of that funding on Early Head Start comes through the feds, but okay, it is through the Early Learning Division. And then under Oregon Health Authority, they are responsible for the McVee grant, which has Nurse Family Partnership, some Healthy Families Oregon, and some Early Head Start. So there's a collaboration on the state level between the two agencies with those programs. They are provided out in the community through the services. For example, we had an RFP process 2 years ago with Healthy Families Oregon, and we redid that process to align those with the hubs so that those services are out there. For example, here in Marion County, those services are provided by family building blocks. In Multnomah County, they're provided by the county. Mm-hmm. So it just depends on where that RFP is. The McVee grant, those services through HFO coordinate with the healthy families in their community. Nurse Family Partnership is through the Public Health Department. Yamhill, for example, sits down all together. They look at their families and they decide where they have an opening, who best can serve the family, and then provide the service.
Great.
Does that help?
Yeah, that was very helpful. Thank you very much.
Chairman.
Yes, Representative Bynum, please.
Thank you for the presentation. I have a couple of questions, Ms. Brooks, about why you made the statement some families are ill-equipped for survival. And I wanted to know, to just ask a little deeper about why you may have that opinion, and maybe ask about the impact of single parenthood as well as it just seems strange to me to have the state support families. And the way I'm coming from this is like, for instance, when I first had my child, I had to have a lactation consultant come and teach me how to feed my baby because my generation grew up as the formula babies. And I thought that it was very odd that there weren't mothers in the community to pass this along. And so now we have these surrogate mothers coming into communities teaching mothers how to be mothers. So that's kind of the essence of my question. It just seems very... Something's missing about this. Yes.
Yeah. You know, I've, from personal experience, as well as working with this program, let me tell you the personal experience first, and maybe this will help you. When I had my son, who's now 31 years old, I did have him in Canada because that's where I was living at the time. And I had somebody call me from their public health department or the equivalency and said, we're your home visitor and we're going to come out and we're a nurse and we're going to help you. And as being the American that I am, I said, whoa, wait a minute, you know, not in my house. And yet, in the long run, I'm sorry I didn't take the opportunity to have a home visitor come because I experienced an extreme postpartum depression that was not diagnosed for almost a year. I didn't do anything to my son that hurt him. But the point being, a lot of parents or mothers don't know that. And when you're in that depression, you don't realize it. So they're at risk. The folks that come in and do what we call the screening, but actually it's entry tool, and looking at the risk factors, can sometimes ascertain if that's what's happening. Lactation is probably another issue, and I'm going to punt to Kate on that one. But again, if that's what you want to do and you have a hard time doing it, and I won't go into the personal story on that side for me, but it's quite amusing with a great grandmother that, well, we just privately. But it turned me away from wanting to breastfeed. So there are a lot of reasons. And then you have families where the children are, or the parents have been abused and neglected. And again, I'm going to pump to the representative here, who are abused and neglected, who don't know how to parent, and they want to be good parents, but you parent as your parents parented. So it's a vicious, vicious cycle.
Chair Lively, Representative Bynum, I just wonder if I could also jump in for a second, because I think this is also, I think your question also raises some bigger questions about just the general approach to community-based supports. And, you know, I think what we recognize, and your question is sort of how you make that a reality, is that different families both have different needs, different desires, different things that click with them. And, you know, so I think part of the reason not only that there are multiple programs is because of that, but I think that's also part of what the conversation and work with the early learning hubs is about, is also trying to have some opportunities where you have some flexible resources to really figure out creative ways of, you know, of having supports that come from the community and speak to the community. I think it's a place, you know, where we, you know, have as a state have more work to do. You know, one of these questions comes up. You know, I think it's been a tension historically between focus on evidence-based programs and culturally specific programs, because we know that a lot of the newer culturally specific programs have neither had the time, the resources, or even sometimes the connections to, you know, have someone do that kind of evaluation. So I think that's a bigger question. That'd be great to continue that conversation with this committee, you know, as we have these informational hearings. So I think that's it's a really important question where I don't think we have all of the answers, but I think there's some beginning, sort of some interesting community-based approaches.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Kate, I guess you're next.
Yes, Chair Lively, members of the committee, thank you for inviting us here. I'm Kate Wilcox with the Oregon Health Authority, and I'm here today to share with you how the home visiting system in Oregon has been evolving over the past 8 years. The original genesis of developing a statewide home visiting system began in about 2009, and I think it came out of the legislature saying, come on, all you home visiting programs, let's get together and create a system that breaks down silos and reduces the competition. So leadership from the various home visiting partners came together with a real goal of better aligning services and supports for families in need of home visiting. The data clearly showed that the need was greater than our combined capacity, and so making that alignment was really critical. It also started to break down these silos of services, which really inhibited the alignment. So from 2010 to 2012, we had a work group made up of more than 30 state and local partners representing all the programs and community partners to develop a home visiting system map. And I think you got this electronically. It's a little bit old. It was updated in 2013. However, and some of the details have changed, but in general, it holds true. And this is the system that we have as a vision going forward as we continue to work on this. Through this process, the work group identified system infrastructure needs required to fully operationalize an aligned system. Namely, we needed some sort of common entry process. We needed a home visiting data system to better tell the story and track outcomes. We needed to develop the home visiting workforce. And we needed to provide resources at the local level to support collaboration across partners and systems. So at the same time, at the federal level, the Federal Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, rolled out its Maternal, Infant, and Early Childhood Home Visiting Program, affectionately known as McVie. McVie is a series of federal grants that has resourced both the expansion of evidence-based home visiting services and the development of statewide home visiting system. And the other handout gives much more detail about what that looks like in Oregon. Oregon's been very successful. We have been awarded every grant that we've applied for, so yay for us. Right? So it's really a series of grants that's broken into two different buckets of work. First, in terms of evidence-based home visiting services, Oregon selected three. Martha touched on them, Early Head Start, Healthy Families Oregon, and Nurse Family Partnership to resource across 13 communities. And the selection of those communities were defined, were selected by a federal definition. When we put them, all the counties, through the federal definition, half the counties met the at-risk criteria. So we put them through yet another lens of where do we see the most health disparities. And that's how we landed on the 13 that are indicated on the map. Since June of 2012, Oregon's McVie program has resourced evidence-based home visiting services for nearly 3,500 parents and children through nearly 45,000 home visits in these 13 communities. Now, the system's work has been quite exciting, too. This resource has provided the ability to do four buckets of big work. One, we provided funding to the local communities to help resource the coordination and collaboration among the early learning hubs, public health, home visiting systems, and CCOs and other community partners. Second, we really focused on developing the professional development floor. So we recognize that home visitors have unique skill sets, and we want to support them. And we developed a set of core competencies that are specific to home visitors, but that align with other early childhood providers. We also conduct ongoing regional training and workforce development opportunities and have implemented a national infant mental health endorsement program for all early childhood providers. Third, staff and partners developed a common entry tool used by all programs to ensure families' needs are understood and that they are connected with programs that best fit their needs and desires. And lastly, we are in the middle of developing, we're getting closer every day, a data system that can collect information across all the programs from family entry to the completion of services. It's called Tracking Home Visiting Effectiveness in Oregon, or called THEO. It will capture the critical data to assist in understanding the effectiveness of Oregon's home visiting system, as well as provide the providers the visit level case management platform so they can better do their jobs. And we're hoping that that will be rolling out by the end of this calendar year. And we also have been the recipient in a regional award recently to improve, along with Alaska, Washington, Idaho, and Oregon, improve reflective practice. It's a big workforce development grant that will standardize sort of the floor and help to enhance the skills of the home visitors. I do want to close with a ray of hope in these challenging fiscal times, both at the state and federal level. The McVee grant had originally been attached to the Affordable Care Act. Through the process, it has been spun off and is now officially not part of that and has both bipartisan and bicameral support. And in fact, there's a bill that's starting its way through Congress to actually get independent appropriations for this resource, as well as to increase the resources. So I think it just is a testament to how successful this program has been. So thank you for your time.
Any questions?
Thank you, Chair Lively. I have a question or observation from personal experience with my wife and I and our children. We have a daughter that has some special needs for disability, and we were assigned one of these programs. I said, okay, it took about a year to get the diagnosis, but once we did, we utilized one of the programs to train, okay, what's out there? We wanted to learn. We did get assigned to an occupational therapist, physical therapist, and nutritional counseling for home visits. And when that happened, it was one person. Mm-hmm. And so when maybe appropriate, maybe not appropriate, but in the medical, you know, background that I come from, normally you have people that really zero in on one aspect of, you know, if you're doing physical therapy, that's different than occupational therapy. If you're doing lactation services or nutritional counseling, that's different than physical therapy. So my concern is that you get these programs and then just try and find one excellent person in one area and then try and check off a couple of more boxes with them. Mm-hmm. Is that appropriate? And if not, how do we avoid kind of these combination of services just to get it done? Because as a parent, it kind of felt like, okay, well, they're just getting this off the desk.
Right. Chair Lively and Representative Hayden, you bring up a really important point, because there's a difference between this type of home visiting, which is really there to support families and do what we call care coordination with community services, versus what you're describing, which is also very important, is more home health care, where specific health care providers come in to do a specific task. Our home visitors are trained, but they're trained not in necessarily a medical intervention per se, but more in the social supports and identifying, doing screenings and assessments that then can shine light on some concerns and then hook families up with those specific services that would support them. So it's a little bit of a different type of home visiting.
Okay, and just a quick follow-up, and I mm-hmm. probably shouldn't even get into the subject, but on lactation services, a peer element might be a good idea. For my wife, it was a little difficult to, after her fifth child, to get instructions from somebody that doesn't have children right. on how to appropriately do breastfeeding.
Right. Chair Lively, Representative Hayden, you touched on something that's very near and dear to our WIC program. Throughout the state, they have peer lactation counselors or support people that do just what you're talking about. So that's another great program that's in supports the same population.
Representative Malmstrom.
Hi, Chair Lively, thank you. I spent my whole career in public health being a home visitor in every one of these programs. And so this is very near and dear to my heart. And Representative Hayden brought up an issue that was one of my concerns all along. When I started, we had lots of nurses that did this model. And I ended, over the years, they dropped off because of funding. I ended up being the nurse consultant. And if you had lived in Multnomah County, what you would have gotten is me, who would have kind of seen, oh, you're doing fine parenting, these are your medical needs, and this is what you need. But most counties don't have that because they're not as big as Multnomah County. But it is, to me, it seems like there's so many options. This is like a big menu, which is great. But there's, I have seen, in my perspective, there's a lot of overlapping. People get confused. They get entered into the system different ways. We did the MBQ at the hospital. I was the nurse person who was had that, and we did, you know, got people in there, but then people might come in through a friend or a contact at, say, Early Head Start. Our insights people in Portland with the teens would come in a different way. So there needs to be a little more coordination in all that, those kinds of services. But I am concerned, too, about that we need somebody that can take, you know, look at the medical component, because these services are all delivered by people that are not healthcare professionals, and they don't need to be, but I think that there's some that need somehow be able to get that overview. And for people that don't, you know, need, you know, medical, but they might need social, or they need social and they don't need medical. So I felt like I was a traffic cop. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's another expense to the program, but I'm wondering if, despite the terrible budget climate that we're all in, if there's some sort of nurse consultant that can be brought in. I was the last one in Multnomah County, and they gave up the program because I came here to be a legislator. Oh. You know?
Go back to work. That's much more important.
So my point is, it really bothered me that it was like, wait a minute, don't just give up because I left, you know? But I thought that was an important role, and somehow that's going to have to get weeded out. And what are the plans for that?
Yeah, Chair Representative, I think we're doing a lot better than we were several years ago, and one of the reasons is because of the McPhee granting. It starts to coordinate that system. Do we have it perfect yet? No, we don't. Some counties and hub areas are doing better than others. For example, the one I mentioned, Yamhill, they do bring all their programs together once a week, sit down, look at who's willing to go into or who wants home visiting, and then they decide where they can put them. Bigger counties are a little more of a challenge.
Right.
And then I would say that once you have a child who has issues, or even a parent that has issues, then you need to bring in those support services. And, yeah, they do mm-hmm. start to add up. However, if you don't get them on the front end, then we're going to be paying for them much more on the back end. Like Oregon Youth Authority, my last figure, and it's a couple of years old, was around $70,000 per year. Then you go into the added, on the law enforcement side, costs of incarceration. And we know that a lot of kids that come through without any supports or help in those early prenatal to age 5 areas are the ones that end up in trouble, not graduating from high school, and continue to be a drain on the system. Being in the program, I know you're intimately involved or know what happens there, and it is, yeah, you're walking around trying to figure out things, but I think we're doing a much better job. One program does not fit all. And we're one of the reasons that you have the McPhee from Fight Crime, Invest in Kids. That was our primary focus when I was hired, to get that funding. And so they've helped with that coordination quite a bit.
And Chair Lively, Representative Malmstrom, I want to echo something that Martha said. I think this coordination issue is really crucial, but it's also something where I think scale matters so much. And it's a really different conversation in a rural community where there aren't enough resources, in a urban community where there's too many players.
Right.
You know, and I think we found there's actually this sort of middle size where it's easier to make that happen. I think there's work that the state can do to make the coordination easier. We can cause fewer problems for communities, but I also think, given those scale issues, some of this coordination piece also really needs to be developed at the community level. So some of our work is also about helping provide that opportunity for those community conversations to happen. But it's a work in progress, I would say, the honest answer.
Mm-hmm. I know that Kate wants to say something, too.
Oh, sorry.
But maybe you covered it. Okay.
But I would also go back to resources. 2 years ago, we finally got Healthy Families Oregon back up to 2,000 levels. And we're still only providing for 20% of the families. So it's a matter of resources, too.
Thank you, Chair Lively. So I'm looking at the home visiting system, your chart, and we've had a lot of conversation around trauma-informed, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering where you see that fitting in the mix. That's my first question.
Mm-hmm. Chair Lively, Representative Hack, thank you very much. I think when this was developed, the whole ACEs trauma-informed arena of thinking was just starting to come into light. So it's not reflected in sort of the nuts and bolts of this, but I think as we go forward and take this and really refine it, it's embedded in all of that. That is something that is in the forefront of all of the home visiting program's mind, because all of us experience trauma to some degree or another, and that influences how we're able to move forward with supporting our families and parenting. So.
Can I have a follow-up?
Sure.
So what type of training do all of the home visitors, is there a specific mm-hmm. training that all the home visitors get that is consistent across the board? For trauma-informed care.
Mm-hmm. Chair Lively, Representative Hack. Part of the McVee resourcing has been to do regional trainings for all the home visitors, and we've specifically called out training from Trauma-Informed Oregon. They have an early childhood provider training specific for this group that they've done.
Perfect. I have one more. Thank you. When I look at the outcomes, there are six of them. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you measure those outcomes? Is that done by county? Is that done by region? How often is that done?
Right.
And where can we find that data and so that we can mm-hmm. see what progress is being made?
Right. Chair Lively, Representative Hack, like I said, this is the vision. These outcomes are specific to the outcomes that are being measured by the McVee program. And so those programs and sites that are being resourced by the McVee funding, we track this data. Within each of these six buckets, there's a whole lot of sub-buckets, and there's a total of 34 of these measures that we track. And so we can get you that information on those specific sites. The good news is that from the federal perspective, all states were required to move the needle on at least 75% of those in a positive direction. We've moved them on every single one of these in the big buckets and 85 of the total buckets. So we've really done a good job in showing positive outcomes, but we can get you that information.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, Chair Lively, Representative Hack, we in the Best Beginnings Committee, based on a budget note that was given to us 2 years ago by the legislature, have been working on a combined set of metrics that we're still working through. They do include these mm-hmm. six areas, but we don't have all that information compiled together. And without additional resources for database, frankly, we're just kind of stuck with what to do with some of that information, too. I mean, where do we put it? We might be able to collect it. How do we analyze it? A lot of questions there. We'd love to give you that information.
Yeah, understandable. Thank you.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Chair Lively. Just a point of correction. I meant to say physical therapy and speech therapy. I don't require my toddlers to work.
No.
Not occupational therapy.
They're out there on the farm.
Yeah.
Any further questions of this panel?
thank
you very much.
Thank
That's
you.
Very helpful. So the next we have four
I got it myself.
People that will be testifying. So Jennifer, Tina, Chelsea, and Alexa. So we'll need one more chair. Thank you very much. Representing Healthy Families of Marion and Polk Counties, Lane County Public Health, and Nurse Family Partnership, if I have all that correct.
Bless your heart, though.
Just enough for four people.
Yes, agreed.
Are we missing one?
I think we're coming up in
two groups.
Oh, okay. Fine. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively and members of the committee today. My name is Chelsea Whitney, and I'm the Development Partnership Supervisor at Lane County Public Health. And I'm here today to talk a little bit about nurse-only partnership, one of the models that's funded under the McPhee grant that you heard a little bit about earlier. So we are a McPhee-funded site. We are one of those 13 sites and have been implementing nurse-family partnership since 2012 in our community. We have over the years expanded it to reach more of our families in our Lane County community as we've seen the need of our community and our family members. We believe in this program a lot because of the evidence base we know that it works. Those outcomes are important to us and we monitor them routinely and monitor that over time to see, are we making a difference in our community and are we providing the right services for our community, which we're happy to say that the data really shows we are. So what we've brought with us today is I have Jill Rodoff, who is one of my nurse home visitors, and one of her clients, Lisa Wormels. You'll notice there's a name change from the agenda. Alexa wasn't able to make it today. She had to work. So Lisa's here today to tell a little bit about her story and her family and why she decided to participate in Nurse Family Partnership and what it's made a difference for her.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi. So first of all, I would like to say that the program has been great for me. And
so would you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Please? I'm Lisa Kate Wormels. A mother to a 10-month-old baby boy.
Thank you.
So the program's been really helpful to me and also really helpful to my partner, who didn't have a job, never had a job, was an alcoholic, and now he has a job, and he's had a job for a year now, and Jill helped us get a resume together, pursue places for him to get a job. She's been really encouraging as he's been sober. What I wrote down was meeting with Jill regularly helped us stay focused on being prepared for the pregnancy. Each meeting, we set goals to achieve for the next meeting, like apply to X amount of apartments or try to cook two new recipes, go for a hike outside to be healthy for the baby. She has helped us set up a family budget and has encouraged us to stick to it. She's helped us focus on the positive things we've done since I got pregnant, like I quit smoking. We both quit drinking, and I paid off all of my debt. When we didn't get our first choice apartment, she was there, empathizing with our frustration and, again, encouraging us to move forward. She actually, like, I could text her, and during working hours, like, she would text me back and be there to support us. Then she, many things she's done. She helped us stay on top of Rowan's development, that's my baby's name, making sure we're introducing age-appropriate foods, games, and toys. She really helped us make the move from purees to finger foods because I was nervous. The time between each quarterly, like 3 month, 6 month, 9 month, 12 month appointment with a pediatrician, that time is scary because you don't know what's going on. I wanted to go to the doctor all the time, but Jill helped us see and has been helping us see that Rowan's developing and growing wonderfully. We weigh him every appointment. We measure him. We measure the circumference of his head. We see that he is growing, even though I can't see it. He's growing. She also uses the ASQ, which is the Ages and Stages questionnaire. They do it at the pediatrician as well, but she would go through it, and we would actually do each task. So there's this thing called the pincer grasp, which is where they're supposed to grab something small with their pointer finger and their thumb. And so we actually did that, and she was there, so I felt safe, you know, giving him like a small puff, and we saw him develop that task, and that was really cool. She also would check in with me, particularly after the election. I had a little, I guess, PTSD, and she was there supporting me, introduced me to resources in the community. We talked through it. My partner's not into politics, and so she and I talked about it and talked about trying to stay positive and stay focused on the positive and how I can help in the community, which is why being here is awesome, because I feel like I'm making a difference. And yeah, she's been great. She's like a part of our family.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I could go on and on, but I think
so would you please introduce yourself for the record?
I'm Jill Rodoff. I'm a nurse for Lane County, the Nurse Family Partnership Program. Yeah, they told me that I wasn't going
to
say anything.
Okay. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
You know, I'm more than happy to say and answer questions, so I'll let that happen.
I have a comment.
Sure.
First of all, thank you for your testimony. You're making a big difference by letting us know how important this program is. The only thing missing is your son.
I wanted to bring him, but yeah, I wasn't sure if it was okay to have a baby here.
Always fine to have babies here. Baby friendly.
More babies.
So, especially in this committee. So thank you very much. And I would just love to ask you, what's your caseload? How many people do you go visit? And how often do you visit each person? Is it according to need?
Sure. I let the client determine that. It's very much based on what they want and need. There is a program model, so it's encouraged for us when we first start visiting them to meet weekly. And then it goes to every other week until they deliver. And then we go back to weekly for 6 weeks. And then we go back to every other week. And then we go to monthly at 21 months until the baby turns two. I always ask at the end of the visit, how many weeks do you want to go, respecting that their lives are busy or maybe they do need extra support and they want to meet the next week. So I always give them that option. My caseload tends to stay between 23 and 25 clients. 25 is the max caseload that NFP would prefer us to have. And every now and then, if there's a straggler or somebody I can't get in contact with, I'll go over the 25 just to feel like I'm productive. But that's the normal.
Can I ask another question? Thank you, Mr. Chair. What are the biggest challenges that you see facing the 23 to 25 people that you're following? What are their biggest struggles?
I think what I've noticed is most helpful for people is support. And I was kind of thinking of the question asked earlier, why isn't there peer support and why aren't more people involved? And in Lisa's example, her mom lives in a different state, and as does her father. Her partner's parents are local. But there's a lot of people don't have that family support right with them. And even so, maybe the ideas or the beliefs that they had parenting their own kids have changed. Breastfeeding is a great example of that, of formulas way better than breast milk. And now I still have grandparents who are in that belief train because they don't know the latest research. So I think sometimes people have a really hard time telling their families know that I'm going to parent this child differently than I was parented. Mm-hmm. So just being able to provide them the science behind things and give them the option to make a choice. But I think support is really challenging. I think that child care is way up there. Lisa's now staying at home with her kid, but they had 6 months where it was just high five at the door and the other one was off. And that is something that I see is a big challenge for all 23 to 25 of my people is I'd like to go to school, I'd like to go to work, but it's just counterproductive for my financial status. Thank you.
Any other questions for this panel? Okay. Thank you very much for being here.
We appreciate
it. Oh, excuse me.
Thank you.
Representative Brocksmith.
Appreciate it. And I'll try to behave.
Thank you.
So you said that there was a woman by the name of Alexa that you had scheduled to come, but she couldn't come.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious, when did you get the call that you needed to be here?
Me?
Yeah.
Yesterday? I as Jill said, I left my job because we couldn't do the he goes to work, I go to work, he goes to work, and we never saw each other. So I left my job. I'm going to school full time. Take care of our baby. But so she asked me yesterday if I could come in.
Well, you did an exceptional job considering that you were just thrown into this yesterday.
Thank you.
So, and I really appreciate this program because, and it's kind of a crude way to say, but because I appreciate the hand up rather than the handout programs, and that's exactly what this is.
Mm-hmm.
And So very supportive of what you're doing, and thank you. Now, if you had, and I appreciate the questions earlier, but you said you have a 25 to 30 person workload.
25 is the cap, yeah.
And in your area is in Lane County. Mm-hmm. How many of you are doing what you're doing in Lane County?
On our nurse family partnership team, we have 7 nurses and a capacity of 175 clients.
Got it.
And then we also deliver under Lane County Public Health, Healthy Families Oregon, and the other nurse home visiting programs I mentioned earlier, Maternity Case Management, Babies First, and Cocoon. And we coordinate together each week to figure out which program is the best program for our clients.
Gotcha. Well, congratulations and good luck.
Yeah, I do have a question.
Sorry, thank you, Mr. Chair. How do you get your clients? Mm.
A great question. Thank you, Chair Lively and Representative Hack. Our referrals for program services come from a variety of different venues. The largest number of them come from the Women, Infants, and Children Program, WIC, which is also located in our public health department. And then we get referrals from the obstetrics doctors and the midwives in our community who know about our program and often refer those mothers that they're most worried about in their pregnancy, knowing that they'll get nursing support. And then a variety of other social service providers, Catholic Community Services, the Relief Nurseries, Early Head Start, if they have capacity in their program, they send them to ours. So pretty much anyone doing social services. And then a surprising number of our clients are referred by a friend or family member that was in the program and really benefited and made a lot of progress. And then maybe a younger sister gets pregnant and they mention it to her. You could use this help too.
Okay, can I have a follow-up?
Sure, go ahead.
So do you collaborate with other folks like you that do this? Are you reaching out? Do you have regular meetings with others that do the same?
Yes, in Lane County we do. We meet monthly as the systems meeting for all the different home visiting partners in the community, both ones that are through the Early Learning Division that have been mentioned here and Oregon Health Authority, as well as other ones that are just specific to our community. And we meet to talk about how do we coordinate, what's our capacity for services, which families are a better fit for different programs. And then we collaborate around the regional training, so such as trauma-informed care. All home visitors in our community have attended the trauma-informed care training, and we collaborated to share the cost among all the programs.
One last.
Okay.
Do you have a waiting list, or are you able to reach and take care of everybody that needs it?
We don't have an official waiting list, but we absolutely need more capacity to reach more families. We have families that we aren't able to serve at the intensity we would like to, or that by the time we're able to call and offer them a slot, they've already decided that they don't need help. That's been too long.
Okay, I have one last, and I swear I'm done.
Okay, one last.
This is to you, and I just wanted to say thank you for being so just great that you're here, and great job with what you're doing. But if there was one thing that you could tell us that you would say would be different or that you could add to this, what would it be?
What do you mean? Like, I mean, experience?
Is there anything that, any improvement, anything that you would, if we could hand you a golden spoon and say, make it whatever you want, what would it be?
I guess more visits. Yeah, I mean, just being able to have more contact, more support.
For a longer period of time, maybe, beyond the 21 months?
Yes.
There you hit it.
Not that I'm trying to...
Leading.
Yeah, at least 3 to 5. Like, as you guys, I'm surprised...
I've had kids, and I'm thinking 21 months, man. That's when it just starts getting crazy bad.
I know.
Like, what's wrong with this kid?
I had a baby proof, all of this. I mean, she was saying, and it's at 2, and I've asked myself this question many times, like, what happens then? What happens? Is she
2's when
gone
it gets tough, man.
Lives? I hope not, because our child is developing a relationship. She was there the first time he pulled himself up onto his feet. Not even Caleb was there, which is my partner. And it's just getting choked up. It's a touching thing to have this support.
Being a mom's the best job you're ever going to have. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Representative Rock Smith, did you have another question?
Well, I just wanted to, not really a question, but just a statement that, again, this is just a fantastic program. And it really goes to the core function and building blocks as being a of our communities. Being a school board member as well, I'll use one of my schools in the district, and you know, the Coquille School District is doing just a phenomenal job with early learning with limited resources. But what it's allowed to do is they have over 200 students in the early learning program, if I remember correctly, and it's allowing both parents to go back to work. And so, and I understand the high five, and I'm again, congratulations on going back to school. But you know, which is really assisting their own personal economics and their own families, but more importantly, it's getting those kids, you know, and we'll move on to Head Start later, but getting those kids that early learning is crucial to development and moving forward with their own self-esteem, social skills, education, so on and so forth. So thank you for all you do.
Representative Malmstrom.
Well, I'll put in one more thing. Thank you for recognizing me. I think, and to answer your question, I think back my experience with all the clients I've seen in 30 years, and there comes a point where those home visits actually end, but the effect goes on, and that is the point of it all. And I've had countless people send me notes over the years, just little notes saying, oh, you know, Johnny is now in first grade, or Susie graduated from high school. I was in it for so long, I'd get those kind of notes. And it was really nice. And it would be, but the point of it is you then pay it back. You know, you help your neighbor and refer them into the program, or you just tell them something that you learned. And that's the advantage, you know, why these programs are so important. And we can't capture all that in statistics and funding reports. It's how you spread that information, and the data on these programs just is spectacular about, you know, how, you know, they make such a difference. And also the other thing too is that you learn how to connect with community resources beyond just what this program is, and again you become involved in those. So, you know, people say, oh, I didn't pay for this service, but you know, you will pay by giving back to your community. So yeah, so you stay in touch in some way. So thanks
again. Thank you for coming and for your program. Okay,
thank you.
This is Jennifer and Tina. They're here. Okay. So Jennifer and Tina, they're here. So if you will all introduce yourself as you speak for the record, I appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Representative Lively and members of the committee. My name is Erin Dean. I'm the statewide coordinator for Healthy Families Oregon. I work in the Early Learning Division. And I am here to introduce and to support our home visitor, Jennifer Becerril. I knew I was going to get that wrong. Becerril. A mom that was in our program, Tina Madsen.
Super.
Okay. So I would like to start off by thanking you all for the opportunity to be here and for believing in our program and investing in early childhood education.
If you just introduce yourself for the record, please.
Sorry.
No, that's all right.
My name is Jennifer Becerril.
Thank you.
Yes. I have been home visiting with Healthy Families for over 6 years. I first heard about Healthy Families in my last year in college, which is when I knew that being a home visitor was a perfect career for me. I imagine you all are here in your role today because you want to make a difference in this world, which is why I am passionate about Healthy Families. What better way in creating a better future for our children and families than to partner with families right before their child is born or during their child's first few weeks of life? Many of the families we partner with have experienced trauma in their life or live with chronic stress. We know that parents who experience a significant amount of stress without support find it more challenging to meet the needs of their children, and the cycle of trauma may repeat itself. In Healthy Families, we are changing the odds for the children we serve so that these children don't have to experience that same trauma that their parents have experienced. During our home visits, we talk about trauma, we talk about stress, and we talk about how parents cope. We connect our families with appropriate community resources to help alleviate their stress, such as counseling, parenting groups, or respite care. Families have shared that they join our program because they want to help to provide a better future for their child. They want their child to grow up being healthy, successful, and happy. We support parents in meeting their dreams by cultivating empathy for their child, promoting nurturing attachments, and giving parents the tools to support their child through every stage of development. We bring joy and laughter into families' homes. Families appreciate being able to take a break from their regular routine and sit on the floor and do a fun plan activity with their child. We praise parents during their positive interactions with their children and reflect with parents during opportunities for growth. I have a family story that I would like to share of a family that graduated our program. For confidentiality purposes, I will call her Lucy. Unfortunately, Lucy was sexually abused and became pregnant before her 12th birthday. I remember when I first came into that home. The home was very dim, it was humid, there were several cockroaches roaming around, and Mom was sitting there quietly with her head bowed down and holding her baby in her arms. Lucy was very shy, and she felt very unsure of what to expect as a parent. I met Lucy's parents. Lucy loved her mom, and her mom was very loving towards her. But Lucy's mom worked very long hours, and they would barely get to see each other. Lucy's dad was polite during the visit, but Lucy shared that she witnessed domestic violence between her parents. We talked about Lucy's goals. Lucy wanted to be a doctor when she grew up. I remember her dad laughed at her and told her that that wasn't ever going to happen. I told Lucy that absolutely she can become a doctor. We broke down her goal into what she can be doing right now. Lucy shared that she wasn't doing well in school because she had poor English language skills and she felt very insecure about her English. We practiced English at our visits, as well as follow up on how school was going very often. Lucy went on to skip eighth grade and started high school early in the teen sports program. And Lucy is very determined and doing very well in her education. Lucy is a child that had to grow up early, and I was reminded of that several times during the visits. Just like any child, Lucy would sometimes put her needs before her daughter. For example, during family events or field trips, Lucy would ask her mom to hold the baby while she went out to enjoy the activities, such as going down the giant slide in the Gilbert house, or preferring to watch cartoons versus going over the curriculum I had brought. I had to be very creative in my approach sometimes to catch her attention, but what usually helped was using the observations in the home as teachable moments so that she could see how the curriculum is connected to her life. Lucy surprised me with her maturity level and learned very quickly. Lucy grew to becoming a confident parent by our genuine and consistent praise and reflection for growth. Lucy learned that she was her daughter's first teacher and biggest advocate. Lucy is raising a little girl who is happy, confident, and ready to learn. With all the barriers that were thrown at Lucy, Lucy was able to achieve her goals, build a strong relationship with her daughter, and become very resourceful. This is what we do. We partner with our families, we empower them to be the parent that they want to be. And for that, I thank you for your support in our program.
Thank you.
My name is Tina Madsen. 11 years ago, I found out I was going to be a mother. I was initially excited, but at other times I felt overwhelmed, anxious, and afraid. Afraid I would struggle with the adjustments, but most of all, afraid I would parent like my own mother. I am one of 11 children, and my childhood was far from carefree, definitely far from perfect. I had a mother who struggled with an alcohol addiction and was physically abusive. At home, I constantly heard the message that I wasn't good enough. I was neglected and emotionally abandoned. Because of this, I was terrified that I would in turn be unable to love my daughter the way that she needed to be loved. A day after giving birth, I heard there was a free program available for first-time parents through a flyer in the hospital. Through this, I was given hope that I would be able to become the parent my daughter needed, and so my parenting journey began. After I signed up for Healthy Families, which was Healthy Start at the time, I didn't quite know what to expect. I had read the information that was given and talked to a home visitor, but still wondered what it would be like. I soon found out that it would start with a simple knock on the door, and over time, my daughter began to expect that familiar knock with energetic anticipation. The first year of my daughter's life was emotionally very difficult for me. Not only was I having a hard time adjusting to little sleep, I was bombarded with negative thoughts about my ability to parent, and in the beginning, I struggled with bonding with my child. Over time, I was able to trust my home visitor and opened up to her about what I was going through. And instead of judgment, I received warmth, openness, and positive affirmations. My home visitor helped me to understand where my child was developmentally and gave me different tools that I could problem solve with when I felt I was out of options. As I learned about child development, I began to understand my daughter's needs, and I developed more empathy for where she was at. Most importantly, I learned to bond with my child through the ups and downs of parenting. Through this program, my home visitor gave me confidence that I knew what was best for my daughter, that I was her first and best teacher, and that I was and always will be a good parent. The positive affirmations and encouragement that I received helped me to become more confident in my abilities and gave way to me setting attainable goals for myself with my home visitor cheering me on every step of the way. I learned I could do anything I wanted if I set my mind to it, and I graduated with honors from Oregon State University 2 months after my daughter graduated the program. A month after that, I began my 3.5-year journey with Healthy Families as a home visitor. Being part of Healthy Families as a parent and a home visitor for 5.5 years helped my family so much. I learned to trust, gained a tremendous amount of parenting skills. My daughter was prepared for kindergarten and flourished academically and socially. Out of everything I learned, the most important of all was learning to unconditionally love another person for the first time. I told myself I was going to be able to read this and be fine.
You're doing good.
You see, over time, the more I gazed into those... The more I gazed into the big brown eyes of hers, kissed her chubby little cheeks, I found my hard heart melting a little more with each passing day. She didn't plan on it, but that little girl with the curly brown hair and freckles sprinkled across her nose gave me a heartbeat for the very first time the moment I laid eyes on her. So if you're wondering about the impact and effectiveness of home visiting, remember the story. The answer to that question lies within it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Thank you.
Great job.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming to show us. That's very important. I think we certainly have understood the value, and what it just reinforces is that there's others out there that would be nice if they had the same opportunities. Obviously, there's more people that would gain from this experience than we currently are able to provide services for.
Can I add one quick thing? Just if any member of the committee was interested in attending a home visit to kind of feel, see, and understand really what that is like, we would be happy to help set that up.
Perfect. Thank you.
Can I just add my thanks? Really beautifully delivered testimony. Thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Chair. Excuse me. Representative Bynum.
I too wanted to echo Representative Kenny Geyer's sentiments. Thank you so much for both of you testifying. And I also want to say that it is my personal belief that the Capitol welcomes children. And it, to me, it's like a church. If there are no children in it, that church is dying. And so it's always appropriate, I think, especially in this committee, that we see them wiggling. We hear their cries, and I think that those are our Oregon values, to value families and children. So thank you for coming, and I think our guest, there you are, bring that baby. So, because he's going to grow up to be 12, and I got a 12-year-old to sell you if you want him, right?
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
that's it. Okay, I'm going to close the informational hearing on the home visiting programs and open an informational hearing on Head Starts program.
That a crier, so
I and Donna and Pam. Thank you for being with us. Patience. Please introduce yourselves for the record.
Chair Lively, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Donna Schnitker, and I'm here representing the Oregon Head Start Association as its president, but I'm also a Head Start director in Harney County.
Okay, great.
So Oregon Pre-Kindergarten Head Start is a program for children and families who live in poverty. And every county in Oregon has a Head Start program. One aspect of the program is to provide preschool that prepares children for kindergarten. And without Head Start, children who live in poverty don't have access to preschool because their families can't afford to pay for it. And if you don't enter kindergarten ready to learn and having basic skills, you are already behind, because kindergarten is what first grade was about 6 years ago. You start running the minute you arrive at the door. We prepare children so that they're ready to do that when they go to kindergarten. In addition to education services, children receive screenings within 45 days. Dental, health, developmental. If a child shows that they are behind in their development, they're referred to early childhood special education for an evaluation. And then they're put into services, and more often than not, services are received while they're attending the program. But the children aren't the only ones who receive services in Head Start. We work with the parents, too, because we believe that is a key to the success of the family and the child in the future. We do home visits, and during the home visits, we create goals with the families. And for a lot of families, this is foreign. When you live day-to-day and only think about what is happening today and can't think about tomorrow, establishing goals is really foreign, but it's kind of exciting when you see them achieve those goals over the year. They're also connected to services that they're entitled to. Maybe you don't know how to navigate the system of services in your community. Well, your family advocate will help you do that. They also help families with housing, food, clothing, just the basic needs that they might need. It doesn't mean that we provide it, but we connect them with services so in the future, should they need those things, they know how to find them. Oregon Head Start for Kindergarten currently serves 14,000 children. 62% of the eligible children in Oregon that live in poverty. Over 8,000 of those children are funded with OPK Head Start funds. Now, I should explain, Oregon is the most unique state in the Union. The state-funded pre-K program is a carbon copy of federal Head Start. And because of that, Oregon can count the kids, all of them. But the bonus is federal Head Start can count all the kids, too. Mm. If we did not follow Head Start standards, we would not be allowed to do that, because we are identical program. So in a program, children, you couldn't tell if they're funded with Head Start or federal Head Start or OPK. They're the same. In my program, each child is funded with both. Over the last several bienniums, Head Start has received an increase. So we always want to keep moving up the ladder till we get to the maximum amount of kids that we can serve that need it. I have included in my testimony a report from the Early Learning Division that shows you student progress, because everybody wants to know, if you invest in a program, is it doing what it needs to do? I sent you a copy. I also have hard copies if you need one. The first statement, I think, says it all. It says, we know from a great deal of research and experience that Head Start works. So we have a lot of research behind this says that. If you will look at the first diagram tells you what the domains are that we assess. The second graph shows you what gains the children have made in all of those domains. So when they enter in the fall, they are in the blue, and it shows you in the maroon what the gains have been in the program. and that all of the children have achieved the percentage of the expectations, so that they are really performing at the level that we would like to see them perform. The one thing that I thought was really interesting is the graph at the bottom that shows that children of diverse cultures are scoring high too. If you look at the Hispanic, Latino, African American, English language learners, and even children with disabilities are scoring high, and they're meeting the highly held expectations for growth. So this demonstrates that the things that we're doing are helping children be successful. Currently, there are 1,777 children on the wait list, but that's a moving target. As the economy goes up or down, that increases or decreases. These children that are on that list will not receive pre-kindergarten services. Head Start really tries to provide a minimal amount that we can. Some programs at least meet with families and do some entry-level things, but the children don't get what they need. And then the other thing that we need is workforce development. Early learning is a new field, and there isn't a lot out there. More and more is coming, but we need more. We need more people trained to be able to do the work, qualified people trained to do the work. And after they do the work, we need to be able to pay them a wage that doesn't snatch them away from us to full day K and to other programs. All I can say is that Oregon has, legislature has made a huge investment in the Oregon Head Start for Kindergarten program, and we are thankful for that, and we want to continue it, and our goal is to achieve 100% of eligible children. Pam Greeno-Corey is the Head Start Director of Mount Hood Community College, and I asked her to join me today, not to testify, but to be available to answer questions. I come from a small frontier program out in the desert, and Pam comes from a very urban program that has a very diverse population, so we are available to answer questions that you have for us.
So I have a question. You talked about workforce development and that. So what's historically, what has Head Start as a program been able to provide, or what kind of training curriculum that's been available, I guess, for those working in Head Start?
Chair Lively, we are required to help our teachers especially get bachelor degrees. Okay. The goal is that they would have bachelor degrees. So the program pays for part of that. Mm-hmm. And every program does it differently. In my program, we support the student with paying for some of the classes, release time, all those things to help them do that. And that's why it's very sad when they depart the program after we've made that investment to go on. Sure. Can't blame them, because they're really trying to improve their family lives. But it really is hard on the program because we're starting over again.
Other questions?
Thank you, Ms. Fisher. I have two questions, because I was going to ask a different one on early Head Start, but now you got me thinking about the workforce. So is there any obligation that they stay and work a certain amount of time if you've invested in their college?
Chair Lively, Representative Kinney-Geyer. It depends on the individual program. Of course, Head Start is just this warm program. In the beginning, we didn't do things like that. Now we become smarter, and we do ask them to stay for a while.
And what is the average pay for somebody starting in Head Start and someone who's been there, say, 5 years? Is there any growth?
Representative Lively and Representative Kinney-Geyer, there is growth if we get increases or a COLA. If we don't, they stay the same. And some individual programs will reward a bonus for, not a bonus, but a pay raise if you achieve a certain level of education that you didn't have before. But of course, we're way well behind what kindergarten teachers are being paid.
And then,
sure, go ahead.
Thank you. I'll ask my original question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Pam, can you tell us a little bit about the early Head Start, whether that's been able to grow over time? And you had mentioned 62% of those that are eligible are able to receive Head Start services. What is the percent for early Head Start?
Chair Lively and Representative Kenny Geyer. This is Pam Greeno-Corey from Mount Hood Community College.
Thank you.
So in early Head Start, I can't tell you the actual state numbers. Okay. So I can tell you that for our program, we serve just under 200 families for early Head Start. And we currently have a waiting list of income, fully ready to go, eligible, of about 400 families that we are not able to serve in our area.
Thank you. I remember the statistic from a while ago being about 3%, and I think it's not edged up very far from there.
Yeah. No.
It's a real challenge, and it's a much more expensive program because it's much young children requiring a higher ratio.
Yes, 1 to 8. I mean, one teacher to 8, and then another teacher for the other 4. Okay. So I should say 2 teachers, 1 for 4, 1 for 4, but it's one group of 8.
Uh-huh.
So... And those are teachers that have degrees.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Chair Lively. Over the years, I've done many, many, many Head Start oral health screenings. And in 2012, that kind of the Head Start dentistry, oral health screenings, dentistry. In 2012, that kind of switched over to the Oregon Oral Health Coalition, and like you, this job has taken me away from the direct contact with those other than in the hospital. But could you expand on what, because I think it's very important and I'm biased, but could you expand on what you're doing, what the connection now with oral health and Head Start is, and how those programs are working from a funding standpoint and a functional standpoint?
Chair Lively, Representative Hayden, oral health has become a real focus for federal Head Start, which means it's now a focus for Oregon Head Start. And part of it is that finding dentists who are willing to do the screenings for us has been a challenge, but we seem to work it out eventually. But we're also doing the fluoride varnishes and those kinds of things within the program, and training parents on the importance of dental health and dental care for their children's teeth, even though they'll be replaced by permanent teeth later. That's always the argument from our parents. But these are just baby teeth. It doesn't matter. And so we're trying to educate them that it really does matter.
It does make a big difference. And even working with pediatricians over a 20-plus year career, it's been a struggle to get away from the idea of, you know, when they're 6 or 7, that's when we start worrying about dental care. When a child is 6 years old, they haven't lost any baby teeth, but they have adult teeth back there, and mm-hmm. people don't realize that. So it's important. The oral health aspect, I think, is a very important part of it. And I see even on our state's website, it quotes that starts out as talking about the oral health early childhood, starts out as oral health doesn't have to be boring. And I'm like, well, who would ever think that was boring?
That's good. I like that.
So thank you.
So I have a question about the waiting list. So you only have so many slots, positions available, and you have these waiting lists. So short of creating more slots or somebody moving or something, then what's the hope that people have on the waiting list?
Chair Lively, there is not a lot of hope if you get on the waiting list. And some programs quit collecting names because they know that the families aren't going to get served, or families don't come and enroll because they know they're not going to get service. So it's just a challenge. And the part is that the kids get so much when they come to Head Start, mm-hmm. but the families. Families oftentimes have had horrible experiences at school. They don't even want to enter a school building.
Yeah.
But because we do the transition to kindergarten and we connect them with the kindergarten teachers, and that they were a friendly place for them to be, they change their perspective on connecting with school. So that's really important. So it's awful to have kids on the waiting list. It breaks your heart. Mm-hmm. But we can only do so much.
Can I answer that too?
Yes.
Oh, excuse me. Go ahead.
I just wanted to know if I could answer your question too.
No.
So, Chair Lively, coming from an urban program, many of our families that in our community. We have been struggling lately with them coming to Head Start because the message has been, we've been too full, you can never get in. Mm. We just finished our community assessment and we interviewed 18 different community partners, and that was the top message that they gave us, was that the barriers that they were finding is that families believe that Head Start is full, they can't get in.
Good point. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said Harney County, right?
Yes.
Can you give everybody up here at the dais an idea of how many hours you drove to get here?
Chair Lively.
It's important for the record.
Representative Huffman, it's 4.5 hours if the roads are good, and the pass was terrible, so it took me 6.5.
Yes, thank you for coming. Any other questions? Doesn't look like it. Thank you very much for taking the time. Tremendous program. We're on your side.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, is that it for that? So I'll close the informational hearing on Head Start. And unless there's further business from the committee.
This is striking.
We'll adjourn.